Miss an interview? Listen to it now at 1043thefan.com. Brought to you by First Bank. You work hard for your business. So should your bank. Talk to a First Bank business specialist today. First Bank. Business banking for good. Member FDIC.
Welcome back. You're listening to Terry Wickstrom Outdoors. I'm Brad Peterson, filling in for Terry on this special edition that we're running, starting a little earlier this week at 8 o'clock. So now we've got a great guest calling in from the state of Minnesota, Joel Nelson. He's a TV personality and self-described fish nerd. And Joel wrote a blog here that I posted on my social media account. Brad Peterson Outdoors. And about big walleye being sterile, and does putting them back hurt the population? Hopefully we have Joel coming in. Joel, are you getting a better signal now?
Yes, I can hear you guys, you bet.
Okay, thanks a lot. So I'm glad you were able to call in. Joel, this blog speaks to a topic that's really important, I think, all over the country as far as how to manage for walleyes. But also the other thing that's important is Colorado, we're getting on our five-year cycle coming up and making our management decisions. So why don't you give us a little synopsis about what you talked about in that blog, and we can kind of discuss it a little bit.
Sure. Well, you bet, Brad. Well, thanks for having me on. I've been fishing for walleyes since I was very young, and I've been involved in various forms of walleye management through our state in Minnesota. And also as an angler, as a pretty serious angler, I've fished on a lot of different shows, done a lot of promotional work, different tournaments, and I've fished all over the country for walleyes. But the things that I've seen as far as angler attitudes in large fish are a little bit alarming from time to time. You'll get certain fisheries, Lake of the Woods in my home state, Lake Erie out in Ohio, some of your larger reservoirs out west, where there's times of the year that large walleyes are commonly caught, or they're maybe more vulnerable. And there's always a temptation to keep those larger fish because maybe that's all that's eating. And it's a real danger because no matter what system we're talking about, maybe with the exception of Lake Erie, large walleyes are rare nationwide, and anglers are willing to pay a lot of money to travel and go to these destinations to catch big fish. But even where they're more common, overall, a large walleye isn't a common fish, and that's kind of led the thought process to some people in saying that, hey, maybe we should be taking some of these larger walleyes. You know, maybe they're older fish and their eggs are dried up, or they're not spawners anymore. There's a lot of misconceptions that are out there, but the research is very clear. It couldn't be further from the truth. The largest walleyes in the system are the best spawners. They produce the most eggs. Their eggs have more fat, more lipids in them, which promotes long-term survivability of their young. So those large fish, contrary to what anybody's going to tell you, are the true gems of the system that need protection.
Oh, they absolutely do. And the other thing is, I mean, besides them just being important in reproduction, and we've got a few lakes here that rely on natural reproduction, but most of our walleyes are brought in through a stocking program. But we do take those fish from a few of the lakes. But the other thing is those are truly once-in-a-lifetime fish. You know, those are the fish that get people hooked on fishing and get them coming back. And I have no problem with someone taking a trophy fish if they want to put it on the wall. I mean, they make great graphite and reproductions now. But if you want to have a skin mount, put it on the wall, I've got no problem with that at all. But just to take a big fish to put it in your freezer, that's hurting not only the population of the lake, possibly the future population, but it's also hurting the quality of fishing opportunity. And if we want to get more kids involved and keep the sport growing and have the opportunities we do, we need to preserve those resources.
Yeah, absolutely, Brad. I think it's one of those things where there's times of the year, maybe the springtime, there's a good shallow bite and you're getting more big fish than you ever otherwise would because you're targeting females that are either pushing up for the spawn or just about on their way out. Those are the dangerous times where walleyes are a lot more vulnerable, and people might be catching primarily big walleyes, but restraint is the better one to be exercised there, just because not only are they things that are rare, they're the ones that promote the future and the future of fishing, like you indicated.
Yeah, now, I think both of us enjoy, you know, keeping some walleyes and a shore lunch or a fish fry. What size, you know, having looked at all this, what size fish do you kind of recommend for harvest?
Well, it's interesting. I think that kind of depends from lake to lake and place to place. In Minnesota, we have a lot of special regulations which kind of guide that. And we have a rule in Minnesota where you're only allowed one fish over 20 inches. And I think that's a pretty good rule. If you're going to keep fish to eat, to be honest, the ones that cook up better are in the 14 to 16 inch range. I'll keep fish all the way up to 18 inches. And in my boat, 18 and above gets a pass.
Yeah. Some of our lakes here, we've got a 15 inch minimum or an 18 inch minimum. So I will go up to about that 20 inch range is the ballpark for me, but I don't like keeping many over. We're only allowed one over 21 in Colorado. So we have kind of a similar regulation as what you're doing there in Minnesota.
Yeah, and you know what? An 18 to 20-inch fish is incredible to eat. There's nothing wrong with that at all. It's just, for me, if I have the ability to keep 15 to 18s and I'm catching them with some regularity, I'd rather target them because, to be honest, walleyes grow pretty fast, whether they're stocked or whether it's natural reproduction compared to certain species. And some of those smaller fish can be more easily replaced by just putting in a couple more fry for stocking. And it's one of those things where, those are easier parts of the population to target. Once you get to the larger individuals, they take more time. They're rarer and they're harder to find. So it's one of those things that, if you can target your take on the lower end of the scale, wherever that may be for your regulations, I think it's a wise move.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And we have a couple more minutes here. And so I'm going to kind of steer us away a little bit from the walleye management discussion. And I know that you are an avid bluegill angler. And we're just about ready to lose our ice. And what we've got is we've got a lot of ponds around here that don't have a lot of weed growth, but have a lot of good quality bluegills. So in a couple minutes, can you give us a tip or advice for those anglers wanting to get out and get on those early season pond bluegills?
Yeah, that's a great thing for you guys. I love bluegill fishing, and it's one of those things in Minnesota and other places I've fished where quite often some of the best bluegill fishing on the larger lakes isn't until water temps approach the mid-60s and 70s. But in small ponds, you guys can obviously attain higher water temperatures quickly. So the fact remains, though, that you're going to be fishing a little slow right off the bat. And, you know, whether you like fishing live bait or whether you like fishing artificials, plastics, small jigs, I think the biggest tip I could ever give anybody is to start fishing bobbers again. I don't know when it became unfashionable or it seemed
now,
like too
hold
much
on, hold on. Been, You never ran into Mick Thill, did you? Because Mick would give you a 30-minute lecture that the only thing that is a bobber is red and white and round, that everything else is afloat, and you need to have that, you know, beaten into you. Mick was a great guy who brought over the European float fishing style, and I'm very much, you know, early in the year, I agree. I do a lot of pencil float fishing, or I still call them pencil bobbers, but you can see a lot in there. I did get set up by Ron Boggs in ICAST one year and said, hey, go ask Mick about his bobbers. And I went over and said, I really like your bobbers. And I got that 30-minute lecture. But I would agree with you that slowing down and using floats is a fantastic way for people to catch fish. And one thing I would say is don't put away all your small ice fishing jigs. Use those at the beginning of open water. Those fish are still keying in on that small presentation style.
Absolutely. Well, the neat part about a bobber or a float, whatever you want to call it, and I have had that lecture too, by the way, and I'm talking about pencil floats or pencil bobbers as well. The neat part is whether you're fishing an ice fly underneath or you're fishing a plain hook with a chunk of crawler, whatever you want to use, as long as it's small enough, what you can do with that float is you can also keep it moving, right? You can cast it up and pull it forward and then let the bait swing and settle underneath. That slow, subtle swinging motion a lot of times is what triggers those early season gills. If you just keep it moving and cast it out and reel it back to the boat, you're going too fast. But you let that bait settle out below so often, right after it settles out, you're seeing that float go under.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. That's great advice. Well, we've got to get running. If people want to get in touch with you, what's the best way for people to find you?
Hey, I'm available out on social media, whether it be Instagram or Facebook, hashtag Joel Nelson Outdoors. Otherwise, my website, it's full of articles, and ask me anything on there as well. That's www.joelnelsonoutdoors.com.
All right, Joel. Well, thanks a lot for calling in, and I'm sure you've probably started quite a few discussions from people.
Glad to be on. Thanks so much, Brad.
All right. Thank you. That was Joel Nelson, and what a great contributor we have there. We're coming up next. We're going to talk to an ex-Rockies pitcher who's kind of found a passion in the outdoors. You are listening to 104.3 The Fan, Terry Wickstrom Outdoors.
You work hard for your business. So should we. That's why First Bank offers commercial real estate loans, business lines of credit, and online cash management solutions. With tools and services designed to make your business run easier, your day could have less this and more this. Visit eFirstBank.com/business to learn more. First Bank, business banking for good. Member FDIC.
First Bank.
Banking for good.